Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The Sisters Grimm, Book 1, The Fairy Tale Detectives, by Michael Buckley.
Prologue. The dense forest branches scratched at their faces and arms, but Sabrina and Daphne couldn't stop running, though they had long since passed the point of exhaustion. Fear was fueling each step now. Another thunderous bellow rang in the distance, followed by the terrible sound of falling trees and shrieking animals. "We have to find a way to stop it," Daphne cried between gasps. Sabrina knew her little sister was right, but how? They were two children versus a vicious monster. "I'll think of something," Sabrina said, dragging her sister behind an enormous oak tree for a much-needed rest. Sabrina squeezed her sister's hand to reassure her while she forced oxygen into her own burning lungs. Her words were empty. She didn't have a plan. The only thing going on in her head was the thumping of blood roaring through her eardrums. But it made no difference. It had found them. Splintering wood and damp soil rained from the sky as the tree they stood next to was violently uprooted. The two girls looked up into the horrible face above them and felt hot breath blow through their hair. "What's happened to our lives?" Sabrina wondered. When had their world become unrecognizable? And what had happened to her, the 11-year-old girl who only 2 days ago had been just an orphan on a train? Chapter 1. 2 days ago. "I'm going to die of boredom here," Sabrina Grimm thought as she looked out the train window at Ferryport Landing, New York. The little town in the distance seemed to be mostly hills and trees next to the cold, gray Hudson River. A few 2- and 3-story brownstone buildings huddled around what appeared to be the town's only street. Beyond it were endless acres of evergreen forest. Sabrina could see no movie theaters, malls, or museums, and felt using the word town to describe Ferryport Landing was a bit of a stretch. Worse than the town was the weather. It was raining, and rain always made Sabrina melancholy. She tucked her long blonde hair behind her ear and turned her head away from the window, promising herself that she would be strong and not let her sister see her cry. She had to be the strong one. After all, she was almost 12 years old. Not that Daphne would have noticed her tears. Sabrina's 7-year-old sister had had her face pressed against the window throughout the 2-hour trip. Daphne had marveled at each ugly little spot on the map they rolled through, taking a break from the view, only to ask the occasional question about their destination. "Do they have bagels in Ferryport Landing, Ms. Smirt?" Daphne now asked the woman sitting across from them. Ms. Minerva Smirt was the girl's caseworker. She was a pinch-lipped, humorless woman in her late 50s. She had had her hooked nose buried in a book for the entire train ride. Sabrina knew she was reading only so she wouldn't have to talk to them. Ms. Smirt looked up at Daphne with an annoyed scowl and sighed, as if the question was more than she could bear. "Of course they have bagels. They have bagels everywhere," Ms. Smirt snapped. "Not on the moon," Daphne replied matter-of-factly as she returned her gaze to the window. Ms. Smirt snarled, which caused Sabrina to snicker. Watching Daphne drive Ms. Smirt crazy was one of Sabrina's favorite pastimes. Smirt had made a mistake when she chose a career working with children, Sabrina thought, especially since she didn't seem to like them. Ms. Smirt complained whenever she had to touch their sticky hands or wipe their runny noses, and reading bedtime stories was completely out of the question. She seemed to especially dislike the Grimm sisters, and had labeled them rude, uncooperative, and a couple of know-it-alls. So Sabrina was sure it was Ms. Smirt's personal mission to get the girls out of the orphanage and into a foster home. So far, she had failed miserably. She'd sent them to live with people who were usually mean and occasionally crazy, and who had used them as maids, house-sitters, or just plain ignored them. But this time she had gone too far. This time Ms. Smirt was sending them to live with a dead woman. I hope you don't bother your grandmother with all these ridiculous questions," Ms. Smirt said curtly, which was how she said most things to Sabrina and Daphne. "She is old and cannot handle a lot of trouble."
"She's dead. I've already told you a million times our grandmother is dead," said Sabrina.
"We did a background check, Sally," Ms. Smirt replied. "She is who she says she is."
"My name is Sabrina," Sabrina sighed.
"Whatever. The orphanage would not release you into just anyone's custody," said Ms. Smirt.
"Oh, really? How about Ms. Lungdon, who swore her toilet was haunted?" said Sabrina.
"Everyone has their quirks."
"Or Mr. Dennison, who made us sleep in his truck?" Daphne chimed in. "Some people love the great outdoors."
"Mr. and Mrs. Johnson handcuffed us to a radiator," Sabrina cried.
"Dwell on the negative if you choose," said Ms. Smirt. "But you should be grateful. There is not much of a demand for rude little girls. Imagine how embarrassed I was when I heard what you said to the Keatons."
"They locked us in their house for 2 weeks so they could go on a cruise to Bora Bora," Sabrina said.
"I think it was the Bahamas," Daphne said.
"It was Bermuda, and at least they brought you back some nice T-shirts from their trip," said Ms. Smirt. "Anyway, it is all water under the bridge now. We found a real relative who is actually eager to take you into her home. But to be honest, girls, even if she was an imposter, I would hand you over to her. We have run out of families who want you."
With that, Ms. Smirt put her nose back into her book. Sabrina looked up at the title. It was called How to Get the Love You Want.
"What's an imposter?" Daphne asked, not bothering to turn her head away from the view through the window.
"It means someone who is pretending to be someone she's not," Sabrina said as she watched the rain outside.
It had been raining the day her parents disappeared. That was over a year and a half ago, but it still made her heart ache. She remembered rushing home that afternoon with a report card safely tucked inside her raincoat, excited about her A's in math and English and her B in science, and a little disappointed by her C-minus in gym. She had proudly taped it to the refrigerator for everyone to see. It had seemed odd that her parents weren't home from work, but Sabrina didn't worry until Daphne's kindergarten teacher called to find out why no one had picked up the little girl. That night, the girls slept in their parents' bed, waiting for them to come home as thunder and lightning crashed in the sky around their apartment. When the social worker came 3 days later to take them away, it was still raining, and Sabrina's report card was still hanging on the refrigerator awaiting its praise. For all Sabrina knew, it was still there. The police had started an investigation. They searched the family's New York City apartment for clues. They interviewed neighbors and co-workers. They dusted for fingerprints and filed reports, but they found nothing. Henry and Veronica Grimm had simply vanished into thin air. Months later, the police found their abandoned car. The only clue was a blood-red handprint on the dashboard. The police assured the girls that the print was not blood, only paint, but they still had no leads. Their investigation had come to a dead end. Meanwhile, the orphanage where the girls had been taken began an investigation of its own, searching for next of kin, but came up as empty as the police. No aunts, uncles, grandparents, brothers, sisters, or even distant, twice-removed cousins existed. The girls' parents had always told them that they were all the family they would ever need. So naturally, the girls were shocked when a woman claiming to be Grandma Grimm applied for custody. Now the train pulled into the station, and Daphne turned away from the window, cupped her hand over Sabrina's ear, and whispered,
"Do you think that she could really be our grandmother? Dad said she died before we were born."
"Not a chance," Sabrina said, as the train came to a stop. "Don't worry. We'll be gone before the crazy old bat knows what happened."
Passengers got up from their seats and took their bags down from the luggage racks above. They tossed half-read newspapers onto the coffee-stained floor and headed for the doors. A conductor announced that Ferryport Landing was the last stop.
"Ladies, let's go," Ms. Smirt ordered, causing Sabrina's stomach to flip-flop.
She didn't want to meet the imposter posing as her grandmother, but Ms. Smirt wasn't one to argue with. The old crone had a reputation as a pincher, and she had left more than a few nasty purple bruises on back-talking orphans. Sabrina stood up on her seat, dragged their two tiny suitcases down from the storage racks above, and followed Ms. Smirt and Daphne off the train. The late November rain was bitingly cold. Daphne began to shiver, so Sabrina wrapped her arm around her sister's shoulders and held her tightly as they stood with Ms. Smirt on the crowded platform. "When you meet her, you had better be polite or there is going to be trouble," Ms. Smirt said. "No sass, no back talk. Stand up straight and act like young ladies for once, or so help me, I'll..." "Ms. Smirt?" A voice interrupted the caseworker's threat. The girls looked up to find a chubby old woman standing in front of them. She was dressed in an ankle-length navy blue dress with a white knitted shawl around her shoulders. Her long gray hair was streaked with red, hinting at its original color, and she wore it tightly tucked under a matching navy blue hat with an appliqué of a big, fuzzy sunflower in the middle. Her face was a collection of wrinkles and sagging skin. Nevertheless, there was something youthful about it. Perhaps it was the old woman's red cheeks and clear green eyes. Next to her stood the skinniest man Sabrina had ever seen. He had a full head of untamed platinum hair and enormous watery eyes buried beneath eyebrows that were in desperate need of a trim. He wore a dark pinstriped suit that was several sizes too big and held a wide umbrella in one hand and his hat in the other. Ms. Smirt gave the girls a hard pinch on the shoulder, which acted as a warning to behave, and, Sabrina suspected, a last opportunity to inflict some pain.
"Yes, Mrs. Grimm, it's us," Ms. Smirt said, forcing her usual frown into a smile.
"Sabrina? Daphne?"
the woman cried, with a hint of a German accent.
"Oh, you are both so beautiful! What little darlings! I'm your grandmother Grimm."
She wrapped her chubby arms around the girls and hugged them tightly. The girls squirmed to escape, but the old woman was like an over-affectionate octopus, hugging them and kissing them on their heads and shoulders.
"Mrs. Grimm, it's so nice to meet you,"
Ms. Smirt interrupted. Mrs. Grimm raised herself up to her full height, which wasn't very high, and cocked her eyebrow at the caseworker. Sabrina could have sworn she saw the old woman smirk.
"It's nice to meet you, too," said Mrs. Grimm. "I am just so thrilled to have helped you and the girls reunite."
"Oh, I'm sure you are," said the old woman, turning her back on the caseworker and giving the girls a wink.
She placed a hand on each girl's shoulder and turned them toward her companion.
"Girls, this is Mr. Canis. He helps me take care of our house and other matters. He lives with us, too, and he'll be helping me look after you," she said.
Daphne and Sabrina stared up into the old man's gaunt face. He was so skinny and frail-looking that it seemed as though the umbrella he was holding would collapse on him at any moment. He nodded at the girls, then handed Mrs. Grimm the umbrella, picked up the suitcases, and walked down the platform toward the parking lot.
"Well, girls, this is goodbye," said Ms. Smirt, as her eyes darted to the open train door.
She stepped forward and limply hugged Daphne, whispering something in her ear that made the little girl cringe. Then she hooked Sabrina in her uncomfortable embrace.
"Let's make this the last time we see each other,"
the caseworker snarled into Sabrina's ear.
"Good luck, Mrs. Grimm,"
Ms. Smirt said as she released Sabrina and reached out to shake the hand of the old woman, who looked as if the caseworker were trying to give her something smelly and dead. Ms. Smirt, sensing disapproval, hemmed and hawed for a moment, and quickly reboarded the train without looking back. The doors shut, and the train pulled away, back to New York City. As happy as Sabrina was to be rid of Ms. Smirt, she realized that their caseworker had left them in the care of a complete stranger. Mrs. Grimm's barrage of kisses continued all the way down the platform to the parking lot, where Mr. Canis was waiting for them beside the oldest car Sabrina had ever seen.
dingy and covered in rust, it squealed and protested when Mr. Canis opened the back door and the girls crawled inside.
"Is this safe?"
Sabrina asked, as Mr. Canis and the old woman settled into their seats.
"It got us here," the old woman laughed. "I suppose it will get us back."
The car sputtered, backfired, and then roared to life, belching a black fog out of its tailpipe. The engine was an orchestra of gears, grinding so loudly that Sabrina thought she might go deaf. Daphne had already plugged her fingers into her ears. Mrs. Grimm turned to the girls and shouted,
"Put on your seat belts!"
"What?"
Sabrina shouted back.
"What?"
the old woman asked.
"I can't hear you,"
Sabrina yelled.
"More than six,"
the old woman replied.
"Six what?"
Sabrina screamed.
"Probably,"
the old woman laughed, turning back around. Sabrina sighed. Daphne took her fingers out of her ears just long enough to hold up the torn straps of her seatbelt. Sabrina rolled her eyes and then looked for hers. She reached down into the ripped-up seats and pulled out a filthy old rope.
"I told you to put on your seatbelt,"
Mrs. Grimm said.
"This?"
Sabrina shouted, holding up the rope.
"Yes, yes, here."
The old woman leaned into the back seat and tied the torn straps of Daphne's seatbelt to Sabrina's filthy rope so tightly the girls could barely breathe.
"There, snug as a bug in a rug,"
the old woman hollered.
"I love dolphins too,"
Daphne exclaimed.
"Not since I hurt my toes,"
Mrs. Grimm shouted. Sabrina put her face in her hands and groaned. They drove through the little town, which consisted of a two-lane road bordered by a couple of antiques stores, a bicycle shop, a police station, the Ferryport Landing post office, a restaurant named Old King Cole's, a toy store, and a beauty parlor. Mr. Canis made a left turn at the town's one and only stoplight, and within seconds they were cruising out of the town proper and into what Mrs. Grimm called Ferryport Landing's farm country. As far as Sabrina could tell, the only crop this town grew was mud. Mrs. Grimm's house sat far up on a tree-speckled hill 15 minutes away from the closest neighbor. It was short and squat, much like its owner, and had two stories, a wraparound porch, and small windows with bright blue shutters. Fat green shrubs lined the cobblestone path that led to the front door. It all would have looked cozy, but just behind the house loomed the forest, its branches hanging over the little roof, as if the trees were preparing to swallow the house whole.
"You live in a dollhouse," Daphne declared, and Mrs. Grimm smiled.
But Sabrina wasn't amused. The place was creepy, and she felt as if she was being watched. She squinted to see into the dense trees, but if anyone was spying, they were well hidden.
"Why do you live all the way out here?" she asked.
New York City was a place where everyone lived on top of each other, and that was exactly how Sabrina liked it. Living out in the middle of nowhere was dangerous and suspicious.
"Oh, I like the quiet," said Mrs. Grimm. "It's nice not to hear the honking of horns."
"And there's no one to hear the screaming of children up here," Sabrina thought to herself. Mr. Canis unlocked the car's huge, musty trunk, pulled out the two tiny suitcases, and led everyone to the front door. The old woman followed closely behind, fumbling with her handbag until she fished out what looked like the largest key ring in the world. Hundreds of keys were attached to it, each different from the others. Skeleton keys made from what looked like crystal, ancient brass keys, bright new silver ones in many sizes, and several that didn't look like keys at all.
"Wow! That's a lot of keys," Daphne said.
"That's a lot of locks,"
Sabrina added as she eyed the front door. It must have had a dozen bolts of all shapes and sizes. Mrs. Grimm ignored the comment and flipped through the key ring, inserting one key after another into the locks until she had unlocked them all. Then she rapped her knuckles on the door three times and said, "We're home."
Daphne looked up at her sister for an explanation, but Sabrina had none.
Instead, she twirled her finger around her ear and mouthed the word crazy. The little girl giggled.
"Let me take your coats, Lieblings," Mrs. Grimm said as they entered the house, and she closed the door behind them, turning the locks one after another.
"Liebling?" Daphne asked. "It means sweetheart in German," the old woman said.
She opened the coat closet door and several books tumbled to her feet. Mr. Canis quickly restacked them for her.
"Girls, I must warn you, I'm not much of a housekeeper," Mrs. Grimm said. "We'll have dinner in about an hour," she said to Mr. Canis, who picked up the girls' suitcases and headed for the stairs.
"Ladies, let me give you the grand tour."
She led them into the living room.
It was enormous, a much larger room than seemed possible in a cottage so small.
Each wall was lined with bookshelves, stuffed with more books than Sabrina had ever seen. Stacks of them also sat on the floor, the tables, and every other surface. A teapot perched precariously on a stack that looked as if it would fall over at any moment. Books were under the couch cushions, under the carpet. Several giant stacks stood in front of an old television, blocking any chance that someone could watch cartoons. On the spines, Sabrina read the strangest titles: Birds of Oz, The Autobiography of an Evil Queen, and Shoes, Toys, and Cookies, The Elvish Handcraft Tradition. Mrs. Grimm led them through another door where a dining room table sat littered with books, open and waiting to be read. Sabrina picked one up and rolled her eyes when she read the title, 365 Ways to Cook Dragon. The old woman led them from room to room, showing them where she kept the snacks in the white-tiled kitchen and how to get the rickety bathroom door to close. Sabrina pretended to be interested, but in reality, she secretly cased the joint. It was a technique she had picked up after spending a year in the foster care system. In each room, she noted where the windows and doors were, eyed locks, and paid close attention to creaky floorboards. But it wasn't easy. She kept getting distracted by the odd books and the dozens of old black-and-white photographs that decorated the walls. Most of them were of a much younger Mrs. Grimm and a stocky, bearded man with a wide smile. They were pictures of them hiking in the jungle, standing on an icy glacier, scaling a mountain, and even riding camels in the desert. In some pictures, Mrs. Grimm was carrying a small child in a papoose, while the bearded man stood next to her, proudly beaming at the camera. Daphne was just as distracted, and when they arrived back in the living room, she walked over to a picture and looked at it closely.
"That was your opa, Basil," Mrs. Grimm said wistfully.
"Opa?" Daphne asked.
"Grandfather Liebling. He passed on about 11 years ago," she said.
"Is that your baby?" Daphne said.
The old lady smiled and studied the picture, as if she weren't sure.
"That's your papa," she said with a smile.
The little girl eyed the photo closely, but Sabrina turned away. Babies all looked the same. An old photo couldn't prove anything.
"Oh my, I've forgotten the cookies," the old woman said as she dashed to the kitchen.
In no time, she returned with a plate of warm chocolate chip cookies. Daphne, of course, happily grabbed one and took a bite.
"These taste just like my mommy's," she exclaimed.
"Where do you think she got the recipe, Angel?" Mrs. Grimm said.
Sabrina refused to take a cookie, giving Mrs. Grimm an, "I know what you're up to, look." She wasn't going to be bribed with sweets. Just then, Mr. Canis walked into the room.
"I was about to introduce the girls to Elvis," Mrs. Grimm said to him.
Mr. Canis gave a slight smile, nodded, and walked past them toward the kitchen.
"That's a weird man," Sabrina thought, as she noted two loud creaks in the middle of the living room floor.
"Is he your boyfriend?" Daphne asked the old woman, who was trying to balance the plate of cookies on top of two uneven stacks of books.
Mrs. Grimm blushed and giggled.
"Oh, dear, no. Mr. Canis and I are not courting. We are just good friends," she said.
"What does courting mean?" Daphne asked her sister.
It's an old-fashioned word for dating, Sabrina replied.
Suddenly, there was a great rumbling in the house. Books fell from their shelves, windows shook in their frames, and the tray of cookies slid to the floor before the old woman could catch it. And then something enormous came charging through the room and right at them. It moved so quickly Sabrina couldn't tell what it was. It pushed over lamps and chairs, leaped over an ottoman, and knocked the terrified girls to the ground. Sabrina screamed, sure they were about to be eaten, when, much to her surprise, a gooey tongue licked her cheek. She opened her eyes and looked up at the friendly face of a giant dog.
"Elvis, please get off of them," Mrs. Grimm said, half commanding and half laughing at the Great Dane. "He gets very excited around new people."
The enormous dog gave one last lick to Sabrina's face, leaving a long trail of drool before sitting down next to the old woman, panting and wagging his immense tail.
"This is Elvis. He's a member of our little family and completely harmless, if he likes you," said Mrs. Grimm, scratching the beast on his immense head.
The dog licked the old woman on the cheek.
"And if he doesn't?" Sabrina asked, as she climbed to her feet.
The old woman ignored her question. Daphne, on the other hand, jumped up and threw her arms around the dog.
"Oh, I love him. He's so cute,"
she laughed as she covered the dog with her own kisses.
"This is the only boyfriend I have," Mrs. Grimm smiled. "And probably the smartest one I've ever had, too. Watch."
Daphne stepped back, and she and Sabrina watched as Mrs. Grimm put her hand out to Elvis.
"Elvis, shake," she said, and the dog reached out a huge forepaw and placed it in her hand.
Daphne giggled.
"Play dead," Daphne said hopefully, and the dog fell stiffly over onto his side. The impact dislodged several books from a nearby shelf.
Mrs. Grimm laughed.
"You two must be starving after your trip. I suppose I better get started with dinner. I hope spaghetti and meatballs is okay." "I love spaghetti and meatballs," Daphne cried, as Elvis gave her a fresh lick.
"I know you do," Mrs. Grimm said with a wink.
She disappeared into the kitchen, where she began rattling pots and pans.
"I don't like this at all, Daphne," Sabrina said as she wiped off the last of the dog's goo. "Don't get used to this place. We're not going to be here long."
"Stop being a snot," Daphne said as she laid a huge smooch on Elvis. Snot was her favorite word lately. "She wouldn't hurt us. She's nice."
"That's why crazy people are so dangerous. You think they're nice until they're chaining you up in the garage," Sabrina replied.
"And I am not being a snot."
"Yes, you are."
"No, I'm not."
"Yes, you are,"
Daphne insisted.
"Anything is better than living at the orphanage, right?"
Daphne had a point. Sabrina walked over and examined the photograph the old woman claimed was of the girl's father. The rosy-cheeked baby in the photo seemed to stare back at her. Mr. Canis had cleared the big oak dining room table of enough books for everyone to eat comfortably. He had left an exceptionally thick volume entitled Architecture for Pigs on Daphne's chair so the little girl could reach her dinner. As they waited patiently for Mrs. Grimm, who was still making a thunderous racket in the kitchen, Mr. Canis closed his eyes and sat silently. Soon his stillness began to unnerve Sabrina. Was he a mute? Was there something wrong with him? In New York City, everyone talked, or rather, everyone yelled at everyone all the time. They never sat quietly with their eyes closed when people were around. It was rude.
"I think he's dead,"
Daphne whispered after staring at him for some time. Suddenly, Mrs. Grimm came through the door with a big copper pot and placed it on the table. She rushed back into the kitchen and returned with a plate of salad and set it in front of Mr. Canis. As soon as the plate hit the table, the old man opened his eyes and began to eat.
"How did you know I like spaghetti? It's my favorite," Daphne said happily. "I know lots of things about you, Liebling. I am your Oma,"
Mrs. Grimm replied.
"Oma?" Sabrina asked. What's this weird language you keep speaking?
It means grandmother in German. That's where our family is from, Mrs. Grimm answered.
My family is from New York City, Sabrina said stiffly.
The old woman smiled a sad smile. Your mama sent me letters from time to time. I know a great deal about you both. In fact, when I stopped getting them, I knew that... She sighed.
That they'd abandoned us? Sabrina snapped.
Suddenly, Sabrina felt as if she might burst into tears. She ducked her head, fighting their escape down her cheeks.
Child, your mother and father didn't abandon you, Mrs. Grimm cried.
Mrs. Grimm, I...
Daphne began.
Liebling, I'm not Mrs. Grimm, I'm your grandmother, the old woman said. You can call me Grandma or Oma, but never Mrs. Grimm, please.
Can we call you Granny?
I always wanted a granny, said Daphne.
Sabrina kicked her sharply under the table, and the little girl winced.
Of course. I'll be your Granny Relda, the old woman said with a smile, as she took the top off the pot.
Sabrina stared inside. She had never seen spaghetti like this. The noodles were black, and the sauce was a bright orange color. It smelled both sweet and spicy at the same time, and the meatballs, which were emerald green, were surely not made from any kind of meat Sabrina had ever had.
It's a special recipe, Mrs. Grimm said, as she dished some out for Daphne. The sauce has a little curry in it, and the noodles are made with squid ink.
Sabrina was disgusted. There was no way she was going to eat the old woman's weird food. This sicko had lied about being someone's dead grandmother. Who knew what she had yanked from under the kitchen sink and added to the recipe? Arsenic? Rat poison? Clog remover? No, Sabrina wasn't going to eat a noodle. Of course, Daphne dug in with gusto and had already swallowed a third of her plate before Sabrina could warn her.
So, Mr. Canis says your suitcases felt almost empty. Don't you have any clothes?
Mrs. Grimm asked.
The police kept them, Daphne said, shoveling a huge forkful of noodles into her mouth. They said they were evidence.
Kept them? That's crazy. What will they do with them?
She looked at each of them, and finally at Mr. Canis, who shrugged.
Well, we'll have to go into town and pick you out new wardrobes. We can't have you running around naked all the time, can we? I mean, people will think we're nudists.
Daphne laughed to the point of snorting, but when she saw Sabrina's disapproving face, she stopped and stuck her tongue out at her sister.
I was thinking that we...
Mrs. Grimm started, but Sabrina interrupted.
Who are you? And don't say you're our grandmother, because our grandmother is dead.
Mrs. Grimm shifted in her seat. Mr. Canis, obviously seeing the question as his cue to retire, got up, took his empty plate, and exited the room.
But I am your grandmother, Liebling, the old woman replied.
I said our grandmother is dead. Our father told us she died before we were born.
Girls... I assure you that I am who I say I am.
Well, then why did he tell us you died if you didn't?
I'm not sure it is time to discuss your father's decisions. We are all just getting settled in, and we can talk about it later, Mrs. Grimm said.
Her eyes dropped to her lap.
Well, if you really were our grandmother, I would think you'd be happy to discuss it, Sabrina snapped.
Now is not the time. Mrs. Grimm said softly.
Sabrina leaped up from her seat, sending her fork clanging to the floor.
Fine! I'm tired and want to go to bed!
Mrs. Grimm frowned.
Of course, Liebling. Your room is upstairs. I will show you.
We'll find it ourselves! Sabrina walked around the table, grabbed Daphne's hand, and dragged her from her chair.
But I'm not done eating, said Daphne.
You're never done eating. Let's go, Sabrina commanded. She marched through the house and up the stairs with her sister in tow. At the top of the stairs, they found a long hallway with five closed doors, two on each side and one at the end of the hallway. Sabrina yanked on the closest one, but it was locked tight. She turned and tried the door behind her. It opened to a bedroom decorated with dozens of wooden tribal masks, wild-eyed and smiling hideously. Two ancient swords were mounted on the wall alongside the masks, and there were pictures of Mrs. Grimm and her husband Basil everywhere. Like the ones downstairs, each photo was of a different part of the world. In one picture, Basil was standing at the top of an ancient stone temple. In another, the couple were guiding a gondola through what Sabrina guessed were Venetian canals. She closed the door, realizing that this had to be the old woman's room. She tried the next door. Inside, Mr. Canis sat cross-legged on the floor, his hands resting on his knees. Several candles lit the nearly empty room, illuminating its sparse furnishings and a small woven mat on the floor. There were no pictures or decorations at all. Mr. Canis opened his eyes and turned to look at the girls, his eyebrows arched. Sabrina slammed the door without apologizing. "What a nutcase," she muttered. The next door opened to a queen-sized four-poster bed with their suitcases resting on top. Sabrina pulled Daphne inside and slammed the door. "That woman is hiding something," she said. "You think everyone's hiding something. And you would hug the devil if he gave you cookies." "Well, I like her," said Daphne. She sat down on the bed and let out a harumph. Sabrina looked around the room. It was painted in soft yellow and had a slanted ceiling and a fireplace. A red 10-speed bicycle sat in the corner, an old baseball mitt rested on a desk, and several model airplanes hung from the ceiling. A nightstand sat next to the bed with an alarm clock perched on top, and on every wall were dozens of old photographs. A particularly large one showed two young boys staring out over the Hudson River. Sabrina went to the window and looked out at the porch roof below. She could probably jump off it and then to the ground, but Daphne might hurt herself. "Let's give her a chance," Daphne begged. "A chance to what? Kill us in our sleep? Feed us to that monster dog of hers?" "No way," Sabrina said. "While you were shoveling in those meatballs, did you ever think that they might be made from the last couple of kids she claimed she was related to?" Daphne rolled her eyes. "You're gross." Suddenly, Sabrina heard a faint whistling sound, almost like a flute, coming from outside the window. She peered into the dark forest behind the house. At first, she thought she had seen something or someone sitting in a tree. But when she rubbed her eyes for a clearer look, there was nothing there. Still, the music continued. "Where is that coming from?" she said. And like an answer to her question, a little light flickered outside the window. Sabrina thought it was a lightning bug. It flew up to the window, as if it was trying to get a better view of her. It was joined by another light, and the two danced around each other, zipping excitedly back and forth in the air. "Amazing," she said. Daphne rushed to the window. "They're so pretty," she whispered, as dozens more lights joined the original two. Within seconds, there were almost 100 little lights blinking and flashing outside. Without thinking, Sabrina reached up and unlocked the window. She just wanted to get a closer look, maybe grab a couple to keep in a jar in the room, but as she undid the window's latch, the bedroom door blew open with a crash. Startled, the sisters spun around and found Mr. Canis looming in the doorway. "Girls, you'll leave that window closed if you know what's good for you," he growled.